discusses the construction of the Mishkan and all of the Kalim that were contained within it. But undoubtedly, the focus, the centerpiece of the entire project was the Aron. In fact, the Mishkan is referred to as the Mishkan Ha'edus, of testimony, by virtue of the fact that it housed the Aron, which contained within it the Luchos Ha'edus, the tablets of testimony. Now, Ramban writes in his comments on Parshas Truma that the whole purpose of the Mishkan was in order to recreate on an ongoing basis the experience of Maamid Har Sinai, that all those who entered into the Mishkan would be able to encounter the Torah that Klal Yisrael received at Maamid Har Sinai. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Yuma that there were five things that were present during the Bayis Rishon that did not exist in the Bayis Sheni, and one of them was the Aron. However, the opinion of the Rambam is, quoting from the Gemara Masechtas Yuma, where it's a machlokes, but the opinion of the Rambam is that the Aron, while it was not contained within the Kodesh HaKadoshim, upstairs, it was housed in a cavern, in a storage facility, within the Har HaBayis that was constructed generations earlier by Shlomo HaMelech. So the Aron itself was there, even in the Bayis Sheni. Rav Soloveitchik explained that according to the Rambam, this was critical because one could not have Kedushas HaMishkan, you cannot have Kedushas Beis HaMikdash without an Aron that was present. It was the source for Kedushas Beis HaMikdash, the source for the Kedusha of the Mishkan. But if this is all true, we need to understand why is it that while there were so many kalim in the Mishkan that were made out of solid gold, the Shulchan was made entirely out of gold, the Menorah was made entirely out of gold, the Aron was at best gold-plated. It was really made out of wood. The Pasuk says, Vasu Aron Atzei Shitin, V'tzipisa Isai Zahav Tahar Mibayis U'michutz. It was made of wood and coated with gold on the inside and outside. Rashi quotes in the Gemara Masechtas Yuma that there were three arinos, a gold shell that went on the inside, a gold shell that went on the outside, and a wooden core. But how could it be that when we came to the Aron, which was the centerpiece, the focus of the entire project of the Mishkan, according to the Ramban, it was the purpose for which the Mishkan was built in the first place, and according to the Rambam, the source for the Kedusha of the Mishkan, how could it be that we had money for everything? Gold galore for the Shulchan and for the Menorah, and all of a sudden when it came, ironically, to the whole purpose of why we created the project in the first place, well, we ran out of money. Now it's gold-plated. What is this coming to teach us? So Simcha Sheps, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva and Torah Vedas, explains in the Sefer Simcha Satorah that it's coming to teach us something critical about the Torah. Because, well, of course, gold is more valuable than wood. Metal in general is harder, more dense than wood. It's wood that is more stable. Because if a person takes metal and he heats it in a fire, it becomes flexible. You can bend it in one direction or the other. You can manipulate it. Wood can be cut, it can be broken, but it cannot be bent, even under intense pressure, even when applying heat. And this is similar to the mitzvahs of the Torah, because the morals, the values, the principles that are represented by the mitzvahs of the Torah are eternal and immutable. And they do not bend, they do not bow to the whims of society. Rather, they represent empirical truths which cannot be manipulated even under intense pressure. And this was a critical message, because without this wooden core, without the core values of the Torah, which are eternal and immutable, almost anything can be explained, can be justified, when it furthers a political purpose or a social agenda. And we see this lesson in Parsha Shmos, when Parah decrees that all of the Jewish babies are supposed to be thrown into the river. The pasuk tells us, "Vatir ena hamiyaldos tzol lekim, v'layasu kasher diber alein melech Mitzrayim, v'tchayenes hayoladim." The Jewish midwives did not listen to the instructions of Parah; they ignored him, and they kept alive the Jewish children. However, the Torah identifies that they did this out of a profound sense of Yirah Shamayim, v'tir ena hamiyaldos. And it's alluded to in the previous pasuk as well, where the pasuk says, "Re'isen al ho'avnayim." They saw the babies, they examined them as they were born on the birthing table. And the Rishonim collect that there are three times throughout the Torah that the Torah uses the word "Re'isen." One here in Parsha Shmos in connection with the Miyaldos, and twice in Parsha Shlach. The first time in connection with the Miraglim, "Re'isen asaharetz mahi," and then in connection with the mitzvah of Tzitzis, Hashem. Why does the Torah use the word Re'isim three times? The Vilna Gaon explains that it's an allusion to the Mishnah in Avos, which tells us that in order to develop Yirah Shamayim, a person always has to look at, he has to keep in mind three things. Me'ayin Basa, from where has he come? La'ana Tehoylech, where is he going? V'lefnei mi asa litein din v'chajman, before whom he will have to give an accounting and a judgment. So again, the Torah uses this word in connection with the Miyaldos to teach us that they acted out of a profound dedication and commitment to Yirah Shamayim. But why does one have to have Yirah Shamayim to save children? What could be more morally repugnant than killing innocent babies on the day that they're born? Why does one need Yirah Shamayim to recognize that? And Gifter explains in the Sefer Pirkei Torah, the Torah here is teaching us that where a person who does not have Yirah Shamayim, absent Yirah Shamayim, one can explain, one can justify almost anything if it fits with our agenda, even when we're discussing killing babies themselves. Ad kedei kach. And this lesson we really taught earlier in Parashas Vayera by none other than Avram Avinu when he arrives in Gerar at the house of Avimelech, where he's a guest. He presents his wife Sarah not as his wife, but rather as his sister. And when Avimelech finds this out, he's incredulous and he's upset at Avram Avinu. Why did you lie to me and not tell me the truth? Why were you deceptive? What have I done to you? And Avram Avinu explains, "Rak in Yerasa Lekim, Bamokam Hazeh, Baharguni Al Dvar Ishti." I was afraid, since there's no Yirah Shamayim in this place, that you would kill me in order to marry my wife. And again, the Malbim explains, observes, that Avram Avinu is teaching us that when we are not rooted in the core values of the Torah, of those eternal and immutable morals and values, we don't have that as our anchor, that wooden core, and a person doesn't have Yirah Shamayim. Almost anything can be viewed as a necessary evil in order to further our agenda. It could even be justified. And we need to know, look no further, you know, than the previous generation. We all know what occurred in the Holocaust, Nazi Germany, that was viewed as an advanced and progressive society almost overnight, became a den of mass murderers and the home of atrocities that the world has never seen. But how could a philosophically, culturally sophisticated nation almost overnight become morally corrupt and depraved? I think the answer is that in a world of moral relativism, where there is no such thing as absolutely wrong and absolutely right, almost anything can be justified when it aligns with our political agenda. I think that that's what occurred to Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. The pasuk tells us in Parashat Shmos, "Vayakam melech chadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yodas Yosef." A new king arose over Mitzrayim who no longer, we did not know Yosef. And the Medrash, as we all know, quotes Machlokes Rav and Shmuel, was it really a new king, literally, or was it the same old king Beneschachu Xeroisov, he had new decrees. So the Medrash asks, if it's the same old king, why does the Pasuk say Vayakam Melech Chadash? A new king came on the scene. It wasn't a Melech Chadash, it was the same old king. So the Medrash explains that what happened was the same old Parah wasn't such a bad guy initially. He had Hakaras Hatoiv to Yosef. He had gratitude and allegiance to Yosef for steering Egypt through some of its most difficult and darkest periods. And he did not want to enslave Yosef or his children. But what happened was the Egyptian people said to Paroi, if you don't do this, if you don't enslave the Jews, we will replace you with a Melech Chadash. Who will? And it was under that political pressure to stay in power that Paroi caved. And he gave in to the demands. Rav Moshe writes in the Drash Moshe that even what seemed to have been at least initially a moral and ethical person ultimately caved under the pressure, because in the absence of Yiras Shamayim, in the absence of the core values of Torah, everything is negotiable and everything is up for discussion. Now, for many of us, the Shabbos marks the anniversary of the beginning of the pandemic. Parshas Zachar was the last Shabbos in many communities of relative normalcy before the schools and the shuls began to close. But what turned out to be many months that were long, lonely, and painful. And much like, a yard site, these kinds of dates and milestones present us with an opportunity for reflection, but also kind of a responsibility for a cheshbon ha'nefesh. And during the pandemic, perhaps directly because of the vacuum that was created by all of the closings and all of the lockdowns, so many of us perhaps became more politically attuned or astute than we were in the past. Well, this is certainly nothing wrong with being politically and socially engaged and active. It's arguably part of our civic duty as members of the Jewish community to voice our opinion and to vote for that which is in our interest as individuals and as collective community. But I think it is important, as from Jews and as B'nai Torah, in reflecting on the previous year, to recognize, to acknowledge, without implying any kind of moral relativism, that on the fringe end of both sides of the political aisle, we witnessed riots and looting, which is offensive to all of us and scary. And this once again serves to remind us that without the core values of Torah, without Yiras Shamayim, almost anything can be justified for the sake of a political philosophy or social agenda. And therefore, as B'nai Torah, more than anything else, we need to pledge our allegiance to Yiras Shamayim, to the values that are eternal and immutable, the ethics that are contained within the Torah. Because the only real moral high ground that can be found is in the pillars of Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. I think that perhaps Klal Yisrael became enslaved in Mitzrayim when they invested too heavily in the Egyptian culture and political establishment. The Torah describes the avodah that Klal Yisrael did in Mitzrayim as avodas perach, back-breaking labor. However, the Medrash parses the word and splits it into two. Not back-breaking perach, but perach, with a soft tongue. Because the Medrash says that they persuaded Klal Yisrael to accept this work upon themselves willingly. How were they able to do that? So the Medrash says, because they persuaded them, they talked to them, they encouraged them. How? Paro himself picked up a shovel, and he himself started digging. And they kind of presented it as a patriotic duty to accept upon yourselves this kind of work. And therefore, Klal Yisrael did it willingly and ultimately descended into oppression. And it wasn't until Moshe Rabbeinu went out to look at his brothers, and he saw Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri Meyecho. He saw an Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri. And Salvechik explains that what he saw was an Ish, a man who was refined and dignified from Egyptian nobility, where all the Jews wanted to become a part of, to blend in, to assimilate into that culture and that political framework. He was an Ish, but yet, even though he claimed to be moral and ethical, he was hitting, striking, killing someone else who also wanted to be part of that system. Make Ish Ivri, Me'echav. Our Moshe Rabbeinu saw this. Vayifen Kai Vachai, Vayar Ki Ein Ish. He turned to one side, to the other side, perhaps of each political aisle, or perhaps he saw that the morals and the ethics can be manipulated based on whatever is expedient at the time. Vayar Ki Ein Ish. He saw there's no real morality here. Vayachas HaMitzri Vayet Meneu B'chol. So he struck the Egyptian. He abandoned his desire to become part of this Egyptian society, and he buried it in the sand. I think that in our times as well, we need to refocus our attention to invest our time and effort into embodying not a political philosophy, but Yiras Shamayim and the Torah and the mitzvahs. Because it's that applies in all circumstances and in all situations, that represents axiomatic truths that cannot be manipulated even in the most intense of social and political pressure. The Torah Parshas Kisisa describes the Luchos as Ksuvim Mishnei Avraham Mizeh Mizehim Ksuvim. They were hollow through and through and legible on both sides. And the Gemara Masechta Shabbos tells us there were two miracles that occurred with regards to the Luchos. The first is that in the middle of the Samach, the middle of the Mem, was suspended in midair. B'neis Hayuamdim. Even though it wasn't touching either side, it remained in place. But there was another miracle that took place with regards to the Luchos. That they were mizel mizehim ksuvim. They were legible on both sides. Usually, when something is hollow through, you can only read it on one side and not the other. Here was legible on both sides. The Brisker Rav claims that these two miracles are alluded to by the pasuk that describes the luchos as miraculous. For luchos, maaser lekim hema, because the middle of the mem and samach stood miraculously, but also the hamichta of michtav lekim he. The writing was also miraculous in that it was able to be read on both sides. But what do these two miracles represent about the Torah, and are they related to one another? So Gedal Yeshua explains in the Gedal Yo and Parshas Vayechi that the middle of the Mem, the middle of the Samach, was B'nai's Hayu'aydim to teach us that the Torah supports itself. While it's true there were those who carried the Yaron holding on to the Badim, the Gemara tells us that the Yaron was nicer, yes, nicer. It carried those who carried it, ironically. And so too, we don't so much as support Torah, but the Torah supports us. The person is given Parnasa in order to support the Torah. And if we choose not to, it'll be given to someone else. That's why the Torah, supporting Torah is described as a tax. The Pasuk says in Parshas Vayechi, the Yaakov Avinu blesses Yisachar v'yihi l'mas oved, who'll be an indentured servant. Because Yisachar was meant to focus on limud haTorah. So he told him, no worry, you'll be supported by taxes. V'yihi l'mas oved. Why is supporting Torah referred to as a tax? So Meir Shapiro explains that it's because just like there are only a few things in life that you can be sure of, death and taxes, there's a third, supporting Torah. Torah will always be supported. It's like a tax. If I don't do it, someone else is going to do it. It's going to get paid for either way. The best creditor, right, is the government. They're going to pay either way. It's a tax. They're going to have to pay. It's going to get supported either way. But Meir Shapiro says, how should we perceive that? What's our attitude towards that? Depends on us. You can view it as a tax and a burden. Or you can switch around the letters. And instead of a mas, it's a sam. This is a medication, an elixir. We can recognize that supporting Torah enriches all of our lives. But the other miracle that took place with regards to Luchos, they were legible on both sides. What does that come to teach us? And in fact, there's an opinion in the Yerushalmi and Masechet Peshtalim that not only were the Luchos legible on both sides, but all four sides. There's one opinion in the Yerushalmi and Masechet Peshtalim that it wasn't two tablets, each one of them with five of the Aseret HaDibros, you know, five of the ten Aseret HaDibros, they were legible on both sides. Each one was a cube. And they were had all of the Aseret HaDibros on all four sides. That's what the many claim is the meaning of the pasuk. Mizeh u'mizeh hem ksuvim. They were legible on both sides. Mem bozeh and mem bozeh. There were 40 on this one and 40 on that one. 10 on all four sides. Why? What does this teach us? Chesko Bramsky explains in the Sefer Chazon Yecheskel and Parshas Kisi. So what it teaches us is that whatever circumstance or situation a person is in, no matter how much pressure he is under, the words of the Torah are speaking to him. It always says Lo Signa. It's right there. You can't avoid it. You can't switch it and turn it around and put it upside down. It's staring you in the face. Wherever we are, the Torah speaks to us. It's immutable. It's eternal. That was the other miracle with regards to the Luchos. It was perhaps Kaisel's failure to recognize this at the times in the Megillah Esther that got them into trouble. The Pasuk says, Esther asked Hasach, Vadas Mazer V'yal Mazer. Find out about this or that. But the Gemara comments in the Seftas Megillah that the Jews at the time of Megillah Esther violated this aspect of the Luchos, that they're Mizer u'Mizer hem ksuvim, that they're legible on both sides. How did they violate this aspect of the Luchos, that they're Mizeh u'Mizeh hem ksuvim, they're legible on both sides? It explains the Be'er Yosef of Yosef Salant. It's because the Gemara says, what did Kaisel do wrong at the time? And Megillas Esther, the Gemara tells us, why were they Chayav Kaliyah? Because they were Nanu Misudas Achashverosh. They enjoyed the Suda of Achashverosh. What was so bad about the Suda of Achashverosh, after all the Pasuk says, it was Lasois, Kirtzoin, Ish Ve'ish. All the food was kosher and Mahadrin. So what was so bad? So Medrash explains, while the food was kosher, it was Bishorakum. That's what they did wrong. Okay, one opinion in the Medrash. How could they violate Bishorakum? They didn't know about Bishorakum. So Yosef Salat explains in the Be'er Yosef that they reasoned to themselves and they said, how could it be we're here in Golos? We have to build political alliances. We have to lobby our representatives. We have to go to functions and affairs, and you expect us to be makbid on Bishul Akum? It's just not shayach in the circumstance that we find ourselves in. It's unrealistic. And therefore, they thought it didn't apply to them. They were more heter. They justified it. And therefore, they made this critical mistake. And they failed to understand the fact that the luchos are mizeh, mizeh, hem ksuvim, whatever situation a person is in. The values, the morals, the ethical principles of the Torah are immutable, eternal. They don't change despite whatever political pressure a person is under. They're always speaking to us. They're relevant in every circumstance, in every situation. And perhaps these two miracles are related to one another. If we want to be zeche to the protection, to the support, miraculous of the b'neis hayuandim, we first have to appreciate the fact that the Torah and the mitzvahs apply in every situation. And Megillah concludes, the third pasuk from the end, no one pays attention to it. And Madashul, they boo when you get up there. But Vayasam Achashverosh Mas Al Ha'aretz V'yei Hayom. Most shuls, they only boo by Haman. By us, they boo on the taxes. Achashverosh also levied a tax on all of his provinces, both by land and by sea. Why is this man mentioned at the end of, it's the third from the last pasuk in the Megillah? Why does this have to do with the nace of Megillah Esther? So Biskarov suggests the following. He says, you would have thought after Achashverosh bucked the rotzen of the people, what they wanted. They wanted to kill the Jews. Haman had persuaded them. And he deposed his chief of staff. You would have thought that would have cost him so much political capital, he would be hobbled. He wouldn't be able to do anything. Be a lame duck. But what happened? Just the opposite. Achashverosh was more powerful than ever. Vayasam Achashverosh mas. Because when a person gives in to the request of Achashverosh, of Mordechai and Esther, when he did what Akash Baruch Hu wanted, he was offered this kind of miraculous protection of B'nai's Hayuamdim. And so too in our times as well, we have to strengthen, we have to reinforce our core values that are like the wood inside of the urn, that even under intense pressure do not bend, they do not bow to the whims of society. We have to recognize that the Torah speaks to us in every and all situations, and that's where we should invest our efforts in Amir Tashem if we do them. It would be Zaycha to the B'nais Hayuandim, to Nisim in our times as well, by Yomim Ahim, Kazman Azim.